from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
The result is legislation that neither side sees as perfect, but which contains a host of significant victories and important achievements on behalf of the American people.
Well, happy Friday. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. It's a pleasure to be with you here once again. That was Senator Mitch McConnell. It's about 12:39 a.m. this morning. The Senate passed a $1.4 trillion spending bill funding government through September, went home after a chaotic 12 hours of drama. And then Senator Rand Paul, well, he had a few choice words about the bill.
Had they started on Monday, they'd be done. I can't stop anything unless they don't do their job and they wait till Thursday night to present a bill or Friday. So it's really their fault for not being prepared. If they were prepared, they can blow by me in a day.
And on the lateness of the vote, Senator Corker said, "This is ridiculous. It's juvenile."
I mean, this is ridiculous. It's juvenile. This is a juvenile process that we go through every time we do one of these. Could we in the future possibly try to resolve these things at a decent hour or come back the next morning and vote?
And the House passed the bill yesterday. In other big news, John Bolton will replace H.R. McMaster as National Security Advisor. Congressman Ted Poe of Texas will be here shortly to weigh in on all of this big news. And a simple internet search will find a growing number of human trafficking cases. It's a big, big problem. There's one group trying to do something about it. Frank Smith with Phantom Rescue will join us on today's program. You won't want to miss that segment. And have you seen it? I can only imagine. It's been a huge success in its first week on the big screen. Filmmaker John Irwin of I Can Only Imagine will be here. You're not going to want to miss that. It's going to be a great interview. Really looking forward to that. It's amazing. The Christian films, I think Hollywood should take note on what people are interested in. And all of this great content you can find on the web at TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me at Russ Jones Reports. Just a reminder, Watchmen on the Wall National Briefing is May 23rd through the 25th at the Hyatt Regency Capitol Hill Hotel in Washington, D.C. Well, as I mentioned on Thursday, the House passed the $1.4 trillion, let's see, 2,232-page omnibus spending bill, and the Senate passed it in the wee hours this morning. Just after midnight, the Senate voted 65-32 to pass the spending package, which now goes to President Trump. And I'm seeing flashes across my news feed this morning that he may veto the bill. Lots of drama around this. With us now is Congressman Ted Poe. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Texas and serves on the House Committee on the Judiciary and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Russ. Always good to talk to you.
Wow, lots of drama. There is so much we can talk about today, and I don't think we're going to have a problem filling up our time. But first, just give me your thoughts. I think there's about 90 Republicans that didn't vote for this spending bill. Just share your thoughts on this.
Well, I was one of the Republicans that voted against the bill for several reasons. One, the fact that it was not thoroughly vetted. Nobody could read it. I don't think anybody's read it yet. Didn't have time to read 2,200 pages. And that's not the way to run our country. If you recall, we hammered the Obama administration for bringing Obamacare up the next morning after the bill was filed, about the same length that nobody had been able to read. And we had to vote on it as well. And here we are. The Republicans are in charge, and we're doing exactly the same thing. So there was no reason why they had to bring the bill up at such a late time. They had the bill ready. They should have brought it up weeks ago so that we didn't face this deadline. We're all going to die unless we pass this legislation. That was one of the problems I had with it. And then there were some other – the process was a problem. But also some of the funding and lack of funding in the bill also concerned me a great deal. And so that's why almost half the Republicans voted against the bill and had to use the – leadership had to use the Democrats to get the bill passed.
Well, here's some of the things that we're seeing that's in the omnibus bill. It's an increase in child care and development block grants. There's an increase in the daily pay for federal jury duty from $40 to $50. An expansion of the low-income housing tax credit, more money for national parks, and I guess there's some money in there for the wall, but it's not what President Trump, is that correct? It's not exactly what he wants, is that correct?
That is exactly correct. It's there's a little bit of money for a physical wall, but it's only, I think, 60 miles of the entire border between Mexico and the United States. So that's not really the wall. It's but there is money for border security, but not money for the physical wall that the president has campaigned on, except for a few miles. So that's not appropriate. If we're going to have border security, let's have border security. And then there's the Cloud Act, which most people have never even heard of. And the Cloud Act that's in the bill, what does that do? It allows foreign governments to obtain data on American citizens without due process.
Mm.
And this is very, very disturbing, to allow foreign governments, all in the name of security, to get information on Americans through our government without due process. And so that's very disturbing as well. But the rush to judgment, throwing everything in and except the – well, I guess they threw in the kitchen sink this time to get votes, and primarily to get votes from Democrats to get it passed through the House was really the plan.
Because the Republicans weren't there.
Because the Republicans were saying, no, we're not going to support that type of funding for this particular project or that particular project, because Republicans, most of us, still believe that in limited government and not continuing to spend our way, spend a lot of money that we don't have on projects. A lot of projects are good ideas, but should the government be requiring taxpayers to pay for this? I don't think so. But anyway, that's why about half voted against
right.
it.
You know, I was watching Twitter comments this morning on congressman feeds that did vote for the bill, and wow, the feedback I'm seeing from average Joe and Jane that are trying to manage their own checkbook in their household and trying to stay within their means, they were pretty lit up.
Well, and we, I mean, I'm aware of those comments, the people I represent and
the citizens were upset that, yeah. You know, why are you spending this money that we don't have?
And rightfully so. It's not government's money. It's American taxpayers. It's the citizens. It's their money. And I'm not so sure that it was wisely appropriated in this massive spending bill. And Republicans always have campaigned and talked about and believe in being fiscal conservatives. This bill looks like something that Nancy Pelosi wrote as opposed to a Republican conference wrote.
Now, Congressman, let me ask you this. What do you say, most good conservatives want to support the troops. They believe they need to get more than they're getting because of all the sacrifices. How do we, balance that internally, that struggle between not wanting to spend more money but also wanting to support our troops?
Well, that was the gimmick that was used to try to get the bill passed. It does have more funding for our military, pay raises. I think all of that is excellent. But why didn't we just stop there and do those things that we should do? I mean, national security is one of the things government is supposed to do, funding our troops. The Obama administration decimated our military in his 8 years. But it should have been divided. So that should have been part of the legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But to get that, for those that wanted to support the military, those that wrote the bill threw in all of these other pork projects to get the Democrats to support it. And I think that was the mistake. It should have just been limited on what government should do. And this particular bill, the part about funding the troops is excellent, and that's probably what the bill should have done other than all of these other add-ons.
Well, real quick, it sounds like there's a lot of pet projects thrown in there at the end.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's exactly the reason they're thrown in to woo specific members really in both parties, to vote for the legislation. And that's why it was done that way. And that's not, I think that's totally inappropriate. So we should have vetted the whole thing. We should have had more than an hour to debate the bill. We should have been allowed to offer amendments on the bill from the House floor to add or subtract portions of. None of that was allowed. Here's the bill. You got an hour to debate it, and it's 2,200 pages, yeah. And the pressure was on to vote for it. But like I said, half the Republicans voted against it.
Let me ask you this. Other breaking news, John Bolton is in today. What do you think about that move?
Oh, I think it's an excellent move. He is John Bolton is an excellent, highly intelligent and qualified in any position that the president wanted him to be in. I always thought he'd make a great Secretary of State, but he knows more about international relations and foreign countries and what's really taking place in some of these countries than really, in my opinion, than any person in the United States. So he'll be a great asset and very competent and smart, conservative, and sees the world the way it is. And I think the president made an excellent choice in John Bolton.
Yeah, and he'll be replacing H.R. McMaster as the National Security Advisor. And, you know, good leaders, they move people on the bus, don't they? You know, either move them in a different seat or they get them off the bus and bring new people on the bus. That's what leaders do.
Yes, and I think that's exactly what the president, that's been his business model when he's being the head of the most important country in the world. I think the president is making those decisions. So Bolton is an excellent choice on the part of the president.
So it's Friday. I'm sure you're glad it's Friday. Are you staying in D.C., going back to the district? What else is on your plate?
I flew back to Houston last night, so I'm back in Texas with our 74-degree weather as opposed to the snow that we had in Washington this week.
Now, President Trump, I'm seeing it flash across my news feed this morning that he might veto this bill. Would that surprise you? What do you think on that?
I'm glad the president has made that comment. I don't know what, of course, I don't know what he's going to do, but I can see his hesitation in supporting the bill. It doesn't fund his border security plan in there. Of course, all the talk for years about the Dreamers and settling that problem, that's Congress's responsibility. I really believe we have to do that. None of that's in there either. And so it wouldn't surprise me, which would be okay. We just go back and start over and come up with another omnibus bill on funding. That's something I think would be okay. I'm fine with that.
And you know, sometimes it's okay to go against the flow and push back. And if that means the government shutting down for a few days or whatnot to send a message, I guess that's what has to be done. But we'll see where this goes. Congressman, we're out of time. Okay. Thank you so much for weighing in.
Sure, Russ. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, too. Well, coming up next, human trafficking, a huge, huge problem. 600,000 to 800,000 women, children, and men bought and sold across international borders every year and exploited for forced labor or commercial, according to the United States government. Well, there's a group trying to do something about this. Director of Phantom Rescue, Frank Smith, will be here when we return. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Make sure you go check us out on the internet at tonyperkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served 5 United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglas as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglas. Again, that is frc.org/Douglas.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendars for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Mike Huckabee, Paul Ryan, Ben Carson, Steve Scalise, Kellyanne Conway, Kirk Cameron, Laura Ingraham, Dana Loesch, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levine. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the special early bird price, but act fast. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Happy Friday. Good to be with you. Well, the Senate on Wednesday passed what some call controversial online sex trafficking bill, sending it to President Trump's desk over concerns from the tech industry, capping off a months-long legislative fight. Well, as we have talked about on the show before, trafficking, human trafficking, is a big problem. And there are a variety of different folks trying to pass legislation to address the problem. There are organizations that wake up every day, spend their every waking moment tackling this problem. Well, I'm excited to bring with you, to share with you here today, this topic. Phantom Rescue remains committed to rescuing children abducted into child sex trafficking and bringing down the industry. With us now is Director Frank Smith of Phantom Rescue, and he comes to us from Florida. Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Great to be here.
Well, this is one of those topics. It's hard to know where to start. Some 600 to 800,000 women, children, and men are bought and sold across international borders every year. And then if you include internal trafficking victims added into those estimates, the number of victims is around 2 to 4 million, if I'm getting the right numbers. Let's talk about the Senate. What do you think about what they're trying to do, and why would some call this controversial?
Well, as far as what the Senate's doing, I applaud their efforts. Like every other piece of legislation, it's going to take some time to see, obviously in this case, whether or not it actually gets signed. I assume it will get signed. But it'll also be interesting to see how it translates into actual execution. We'll call it in the marketplace, for lack of a better term. Often these type of legislative measures just don't get executed, and people ignore them. And so that's part of the problem.
So tell us about Phantom Rescue, and how did the organization come about, and just give us a little history about what its purpose to do.
Well, Phantom Rescue started back in 2005. Tony Sparks and Rodney Mann, who I will say rest in peace, had gotten together and were semi-retiring from a career as Army Delta, and they had seen some of the most evil places the world had to offer, and they decided that they were going to continue their service in attempting to deal with victims in the sex trafficking industry. And they got together, they formed Phantom Rescue, and they originally devoted their attention to just doing rescues, both domestically and foreign, of victims. Over time, unfortunately, Rodney passed in a training accident when he was training for a mission. And we took the entity and decided that Phantom Rescue would be equally well served by doing education and awareness. Because while we can go out and we can rescue a victim, and that's great, and we pull a victim out of a sex trafficking situation, if I can teach education and awareness and prevent victims from getting taken in the first instance, then I'm probably saving a lot more children.
And that goes to the fact of what the Senate's trying to do, because, Frank, I was reading that some 50% of those victims are estimated to be children, and an estimated that 76% of the transactions for sex with underage girls start on the Internet, thus the Senate trying to tackle the online sex trafficking bill.
This has been something that's been everybody's been attempting to deal with it for some time now is the best way to describe it. There are laws on the books. They haven't been enforced. Let me back up a little bit, Russ, and give you a little bit of context. This may help. When I first started talking about the sex trafficking industry, you know, I would talk to people, and what I would get is I would get people looking away from me and asking me questions like, isn't this something that only happens overseas? And they would start backing away. And I drew an analogy to if I stepped into the same room and talked about, you know, abusing a dog or a cat or a domestic animal of other types, people would freak out. They'd start screaming and yelling. But almost like everybody wanted to bury their head in the sand when it came to sex trafficking. They either didn't want to believe it existed or it was just so purely evil that they didn't want to deal with it at all. And so now, fortunately, it's coming to light that this is an actual real circumstance. This is something that needs to be dealt with. And so you're watching not only the United States government, you know, in D.C., but each state is actually undertaking measures to try to deal with sex trafficking in their particular locale.
Well, Frank, this is one of the most atrocious acts I believe a human can make. I mean, this is, you know, and when they make it to prison, I used to be a volunteer chaplain in Leavenworth, Kansas, at the big house there, the penitentiary, and the sex offenders, child sex offenders in there, they had a rough time. Even the really bad guys, the homicidal, the murderer types, they were the sex offenders, the child sex offenders were the lowest of the low.
One of the reasons for my original involvement in the sex trafficking industry, as well as one of the mantras of Phantom, is that it's an area for which there is simply no debate. When you look at everything that we're dealing with in today's society, whether or not you feel passionate about an issue, there's always a secondary voice. In sex trafficking, there is no secondary voice. You're not going to find anybody who's going to come out and say, oh, I'm for sex trafficking. You're not going to find anybody who's going to advocate that we need to protect sex traffickers. Okay? And more to your point, even criminals in the United States understand that point. Okay? They may argue whether or not, you know, a drug bust or, you know, an assault, you know, is something that is, how bad is it when it comes to sex trafficking, particularly when children are involved? Everybody agrees across the board it's just purely evil.
Well, we're facing a break here. Frank, do you have time to stick around with us and talk a little bit more on this? I'd like to dig a little bit deeper, like, you know, talking about some of the prevention efforts and where are these kids coming from and where are they going? Are they being shipped? So do you have a moment to stay with us?
Absolutely. I'm at your beck and call.
All right. Well, friends, we're talking about a very important issue, the plight of human trafficking and the children. and the organization of Phantom Rescue. We've been talking with Frank Smith, and he's a director at Phantom Rescue. We're going to dig into this a little more. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. Make sure you go find us on the web at tonyperkins.com, and you can also follow Tony on Twitter at tperkins. You can follow me at Russ Jones Reports. We'll be back after the break. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com. You've tuned in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, filling in for Tony Perkins. Good to be with you. Happy Friday. We're not talking about a real happy topic here, but one important fact is that there's an organization that is trying to fix it and to tackle it. We've been talking with Frank Smith. He's a director at Phantom Rescue. Thanks for holding on with us, Frank.
No problem, Russ. Again, glad to be here. And this is an important topic, so anything I can do to help.
Well, most trafficked forced labor affects people working kind of at the margins of the economy with irregular employment or migration status, some would think. Help us understand what kind of kids are being trafficked and where are they going?
Well, what I'll tell you is that we identify three different categories of children who are being trafficked. And just to give you an idea, parameters-wise, the average age is somewhere between 11 and 14 is what we use. And just so you know, kids who do not get out of the trafficking industry generally live between 3 and 7 years. That's it. Okay? They don't make it any further than that. And the average traffic victim gets trafficked between 10 and 15 times a day, just to give you some context. The three groups of children that we look at are the at-risk children, which everybody generally understands, you know, kids who are homeless, kids who are on the wrong side of the tracks, for lack of a better metaphor. You know, these are the kids who you would assume are going to get taken, and a lot of times they do. You then have community children. You have kids who participate in events, you know, sports events, dance events, things like that, where there's just a large group of kids, and that sometimes is like a feeding ground for the sex traffic predators. And then you have targeted kids who somebody actually will go out and put in a particular order, you know, on the dark web and say, hey, look, I'm looking for a particular child of this shape, this size, you know, even put up pictures, and they actually deal with it. And that's so as you could see, it's pretty much across the board as far as what type of children are getting taken. And when you asked about where they go everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you this. I believe at last count, the United Nations recognizes 195 countries, if we assume the quasi countries are included. Of those countries, Phantom Rescue has deployed to 140 of them.
Hmm.
And I will tell you that the other 55 countries have problems as well. Now, it might not be as prevalent in some of them, but across the board, I don't think there's any country that's untouched by this problem.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, I'm an investigative journalist at heart, been doing this for 30-some years and asked questions that maybe make folks uncomfortable sometimes, but what about the trafficking of sex slaves among the elite echelons of society, the pedophilia networks and government and global elites? I just can't wrap my head around that.
Well, the way I can speak to that is I could say that you'd have to understand what the sex trafficking industry revolves around. You're talking about children as a commodity.
Hmm.
Okay, so like every other commodity, a vice commodity, I mean, I can draw correlations to, you know, the alcohol industry, to the illegal drug trafficking industry. There is always going to be a group who have more money and more power, and they want the best of the best.
Hmm.
And I would suggest to you that just like any other industry, the sex trafficking industry has their elite, they're powerful. You understand that this is, like I said, amongst the most egregious of human rights violations. And so they'd have to have money and power in order to be able to perpetuate the industry. So while I can't tell you I have any specific knowledge of who is involved at that level, I can tell you it would not at all surprise me. And I could pretty much guarantee it's a virtual certainty that there is this top level elite.
Mm-hmm. Well, scenario here, do you actually go help rescue people?
I do not personally. The constituency of Phantom Rescue is about 70 former special operations individuals, majority from the U.S. but around the world. They all maintain a top secret clearance.
Mm-hmm.
We interface with local law enforcement and international law enforcement, and in fact we try to do everything between the lines when we do what we do. I'm just a lowly attorney on the totem pole. I didn't get to serve, and I do not maintain that clearance, and it helps me do my job. I let them do their job, and I do not go on the rescues, although I am fairly familiar with what happens in these circumstances.
Well, we all have our place in the big picture, so, you know, being aware of the law and what's between the lines and all that is important, and I'm sure that's meaningful to the organizations. So where can folks find out more information, and what can the average person do? We've just got a little bit of time left.
Okay. They can check out www.phantomrescue.org to look at our website. There are tons and tons of human trafficking websites around the country. The average person can keep their eyes open and educate themselves on this subject. There are also lots of organizations such as Phantom Rescue, which are trying to educate the children. Phantom Rescue has a new project called Captain Rescue at captainrescue.org. Captain Rescue is designed in a cartoon fashion, an animated fashion, to be able to help children understand that the people who they're talking to in social media and in the gaming world are not necessarily who they think they are. Because as we discussed earlier, it is through the social media and the internet that a large part of these children are taken.
Well, Frank, thanks so much. We're out of time, unfortunately. We'll have to have you all back on the show again. Very informative. I appreciate your time, Frank.
My pleasure, Russ. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We've been talking with Frank Smith, director at Phantom Rescue, on human trafficking. Make sure you go to their website, phantomrescue.com. You can also go to tonyperkins.com. We'll have all the information for you there. Well, a huge success in the box office and in the big screen in its opening week. I can only imagine. Have you seen it? Well, this is a special treat. We're going to talk with filmmaker John Irwin. John and his brother Andy are the directors of the show. We'll talk with John when we return.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most: faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, Chairman of the Board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, President of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. I can only imagine. Then that song, Get You, those of us of the believing kind, Christian faith, can only imagine standing with our Lord, our Creator. Well, the newly released Christian film, I Can Only Imagine, which tells the true story of Bart Millard, the vocalist of the Christian band Mercy Me, who wrote the hit song, I Can Only Imagine, was the third highest grossing film in the country its opening weekend, earning $17.1 million. That's pretty amazing, considering the film cost $7 million to make. It was 45% more than the number five film, Love, Simon, a gay teen love story, which also opened the same weekend, which made $11.8 million. It's my honor now to welcome filmmaker John Irwin, along with his brother Andy. The Irwin brothers brought us October Baby, Mom's Night Out, and Woodlawn, and now I Can Only Imagine. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me, and we love and appreciate you guys and Tony as well, and have for so many years. And Tony always tells me that I provide kind of the, I think it's Friday movie nights with he and his family, and so
yes,
with some of the other films that we made. So it's just I mean, my goodness, what a moment that you've given us. And it's so cool to see, you know, people of faith and Christians and conservatives, our voice being heard this loudly, and surprising an industry, shocking an industry, really, It's an unbelievable moment. I keep thinking, am I dreaming? Is this really happening? It's just amazing to be watching all this unfold.
Well, congratulations on this big weekend success. You know, John, what's interesting, I also teach journalism and culture online at Liberty University.
Oh, cool.
And just this week, we were talking about the impact of Christian films as one of the topics, and yeah. Kids were writing papers, and I was able to chime in with kind of my insider position, you know, that I never take for granted. I get to talk with folks like you. I get to do this for a living and get paid for it and tell these great yeah. stories, and got to push back a little bit on some of the students that were not so sure whether Christian films were having an impact and whatnot. And I was saying, time out, dude. Let me tell you some things that are going on. So that was pretty exciting for me, and it's got to be pretty exciting for you to, you know, to see folks turning out like they are.
Well, I mean, never in our wildest dreams did we think we'd be the number three movie in the country. Actually, yesterday and today, I'm sorry, Wednesday and Thursday, we've been the number two movie in America. Beaten only by Black Panther, which is a worthy adversary for sure.
That's
so,
right.
you know, don't ever let anyone tell you that a Christian film can't compete with superheroes and game franchises, and because we just did, and we serve a big God, and it's so cool to see the power of these stories and the cultural influence of these stories, not only but here. But also around the world, you know, entertainment is America's second largest export. And so it's just, you know, I can only imagine. I always have. It was really an anchor of hope in my life through difficult seasons of my life. And not to me only, to millions and millions of people. And to think that over 3 million people have seen this film in theaters in 1 week, and we're just getting started, and that we've left an industry reeling. Is so cool. And, you know, USA Today called it a David and Goliath moment. Mm-hmm. IndieWire called it a Cinderella story, and they're so right. And you guys have made that happen. And we just went in with an absolute faith, especially as so many studios turned down this film and wouldn't finance it. We had to pull the money together. Our team had to pull the money together. You know, it's so cool to see our belief in the audience pay off. And there's just an enormous audience between what my industry calls the flyover between LA and New York. And our voice has been heard, and we've sent such a clear message. We want more stories like this. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's amazing to see. And then what's happening in the theaters, it's movies changing people's lives, you know? So it's an amazing moment. I think we've only begun to scratch the surface of what a faith film or a Christian film or whatever you want to call it could become. And I think this is certainly a quantum leap forward for Andy and I. And I hope maybe, you know, a step forward for Christian film in general. And I think that we're going to keep seeing this growing and the quality keep getting better. And hopefully there'll be more and more diversity and more types of films can be made under the banner of sharing the truths and values and gospel that we so deeply care about in the form of great stories.
Well, you know, of course, the movie tells the story of the Mercy Me lead singer about broken relationships and his dad and yeah. just heartache in his life. Have you talked to Bart about the film and how it's going this week?
Oh, Bart has. I've been with him all week, and we took the Mercy Me buses and toured all over Oklahoma and Texas, and then we were just together at a with a concert with Trace Adkins, who's also in the movie, and just did a satellite media tour and a bunch of radio yesterday, and recorded the director's commentary. And we're all, you know, we're a family, really, and we've all just been stunned by the result. I mean, not in my wildest dreams did I think that the film would have this kind of result. It's just so far beyond anything that we could have ever hoped for. You know, it's the largest opening for a Christian film since Heaven Is For Real, many years ago.
Wow.
It's just a very, very cool moment. And so Bart is as blown away as we are, and I'm so grateful for him. I remember so vividly being hooked on this story as soon as he said, "I know God is real because of the change I saw in my dad." He said, "I watched a monster transform into my best friend and the man I wanted to become." and there's just no other explanation for it. And that moved me so deeply, the idea that this song that we all know to be about heaven is really a father, you know, a son singing for his father, because their relationship was mended and put back together and restored, and the gospel changed this man. And when Dennis Quaid signed on to the project, he said, "I've never played transformation on film like this before," you know, and it was just unbelievable to see the way he portrays the changes in Bart's dad, and it's such a great performance. And so I think that it took a lot of boldness and courage for Bart to let this story be told, but I think it's bringing hope to millions mm-hmm. of people to know that God can change any person, any situation. And even our pain can become our inspiration. And it's just a great story and relatable. Honestly, no matter what you believe, I have this thing that I say, when we put the values of Christianity on display and we display them correctly, they're universally appealing. Mm-hmm. I mean, people need hope. They need redemption. They need forgiveness. And we crave these things. And you know, a story, especially a true story, is a great way to get them through to people and to culture. And we can, I'm telling you, we can play ball. We can play, as Christians and as conservatives, we can play ball in a much more powerful way in the arts, in mass entertainment. And I hope to be a part of you know, pushing that forward and doing kind of similar to what happened with Christian music. You know, two of the artists that launched Andy and I's music video career, Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith, we directed music videos for many years, also helped launch the song. There's a story about that in the film. You know, if you look at what Christian music was when they started and what it's become, now it's this platform. It's really some great stuff, like with this kind of renaissance of worship that we're in. And there's a place where young music artists can shine and make a living and create all kinds of diversity in the kinds of mm-hmm. music that, you know, under the banner of Christian music. And I hope we can do the same thing with film, you know, and I think we're just getting started.
Do you think it sends a message to Hollywood about the kind of films Americans really would prefer to see? I mean, don't they just, they may not agree with the message, but the bottom line has got to be noteworthy.
I'll tell you this. Yes, you have sent such a clear message. I think the voice of the unified middle American audience of faith and values and conservative ideals is so powerful when we come together on the same thing. And we've done that this weekend, and I hope we do it again this weekend. We've done it last weekend, and I hope we do it again this weekend. It's just incredible to see the shockwaves throughout the mm-hmm. entertainment industry, that the surprise that has happened. And, you know, I get all these PR emails sent to me by our publicist of who's writing about the film, and I got the strangest one yesterday. Didn't click on the link, but the article was embedded in the email. Playboy magazine literally wrote an article that said, yeah, "I can only imagine the surprise hit of the season," or something like that. And it was a positive review, and they said the last time a Christian film was on their radar was The Passion of the Christ. So when, you know, Playboy is getting the gospel out, something fundamental is going on culturally, and I don't know what to think about that, but it's amazing to see.
Yeah. Just, well, we won't think too hard about it. We just applaud it. We won't think too hard about it.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't read it or anything like that. It's just amazing to me that sources that would never write about a Christian film are bending their knee to it, in the sense, and recognizing the power of it. And I think that this is a chance for us to get the gospel message out to people who would never hear it otherwise, and people who are turning to the wrong thing for happiness and satisfaction and fulfillment in life, the things that ultimately reside in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we're going to go to them. You know, the Bible says to go and tell. And we're going to take the gospel where the gospel doesn't normally go. And to see some of the ramifications of that have honestly shocked me. I had, you know, some people that are talking about the film, the film studios that are mentioning the film and talking about it. It's just, it really is stunning. And I believe that's what we can do. There's this word called FOMO that Christians can use, FOMO. It means the fear of missing out.
Love that.
And basically that drives culture today. Well, we can create it too. With one voice at one time, we champion the same thing. You know, we forget that in the Bible, the walls of Jericho fell down when everyone yelled at the same time. Well, the same thing can happen with the walls between us and culture and this generation that we so want to reach. And I want to go out and play offense. You know, culturally, the Bible says, "You know, on this rock I'll build my church. The gates of hell will not prevail against it." A gate is not a weapon. Nobody's going to throw a gate at you. Nobody's going to attack you with a gate. We have to storm gates. That's what we're built to do. And it's so cool to see us storming culture this weekend at the movie theater and getting this message that true fulfillment and true peace and joy and that God can heal any relationship and that God can heal any circumstance and that that's where happiness really is. And taking that message in places that it never goes is what we all just did this weekend and what we can continue to do. Because now they're calling it the number one inspirational film of the year. They're calling it the number one independent film of the year. And so now a lot of people that are just moviegoers are going to start go if we keep championing it together, are going to go see it. And that is very important because a generation that is no longer attending church is a dead-on statistical match for frequent moviegoers. This is their church. And so let's go engage them, and let's go there. And this is a movie that you love, that you can bring your whole family to and enjoy. But by enjoying it, our voices are being heard in a very powerful way culturally.
Well, John, again, congratulations. Thank you so much. And we're hearing people are viewing it multiple times, just like they listen to the song, you know, in the theaters and staying afterwards and praying and singing. And it's just really one of those heartwarming stories and successes. You know, we want to see folks like you succeed. We really do. And you give other people hope and maybe even new budding filmmakers to go out there and step in faith.
Well, I hope that we can, you know, I remember Sean Astin told me on when we were working on Woodlawn, he said, John, I see you guys as frontiersmen and pioneers. And I said, thank you, Sean. That's what we want to do. That's what we want to blaze a trail. And he said, you know, John, most frontiersmen die out on the frontier. And I'm like, well, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
But the trail will be clearly marked.
That's
and,
right.
And we'll be frozen pointing to the summit or something like that. But the idea is we want to empower a generation of talent. We know that there's so many coming behind us that are going to so far outshine and exceed our talent. And we want to give them a voice and give them a platform. And we've got to speak in the only language that Hollywood understands, which is success and profit.
Yeah. Amen.
And we're doing that this weekend. And my hope is that we can create a way where many, many other voices can be heard. And we can take the cultural megaphone back, you know, and we can reestablish our voice in culture again. And this is a quantum leap in that regard. And I'm just so encouraged and so grateful for everybody that went and saw the film and for the emotional experience they're having and how entertained they are. And yet how also the film is really beginning to change lives, whether it was the guy in Sioux Falls that decided to find his dad on Facebook that he hadn't seen since he was a teenager and forgive him, or the woman that was literally going to take her own life on Thursday and decided to go to the movie instead on Friday with her friends and it saved her. That's happening all over the country and going to happen all over the world. And I want to thank everyone that's supporting the film.
Well, John, thank you so much. We're out of time. Thank you so much. God bless you. And we'll continue to follow the success. Thank you for coming on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
Been talking with John Irwin of the Irwin Brothers. I don't know about you, but I can only imagine. And Isaiah 43:2, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep you over. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. Friends, I can only imagine coming face to face with our Lord. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. Be blessed and be well.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.